how should I introduce you? I Googled your name to write a quick little intro, and it's like Alex Goldman, host of Reply All, Alex Goldman, podcast extraordinaire.
Well, I'm going to be hosting a new show called Hyperfixed that starts September 12th. And then other than that, you can just say podcast producer.
Okay, Alex Goldman, podcast producer of quite literally the greatest podcast that has ever, ever existed. I'm a huge fan of Reply All. I started listening to you all back in 2017. You have such a positive impact on my life. I just want to say that before we begin. I was working in this hospital with kids with really serious autism, and I would drive 2 hours every morning. And it was just such like sad job, sad drive. And I started listening to your podcast. And it was, Alex, it's quite literally the only joy I got in that day.
Oh.
I mean, I hope you know what a positive impact you made on the lives of so many people. I was looking at the Reply All subreddit yesterday, like looking at people's favorite episodes, getting a recap on ones that were my favorite. And overwhelmingly, everyone was just talking about how much they loved your show, how happy it made them during different parts of their life. So I hope you know that it is amazing. So, for my listeners who don't know what Reply All is, can you tell me your story?
It is a podcast that is nominally about the internet, but that I think is a ruse to just talk about stuff we wanted to talk about. Because when did we start it? 2014? The internet looked very different then, I feel like. But it was still, you know, we were ahead of the game on one tiny thing, which is that we were online enough that the internet was just like where we lived. And I think the rest of the world wasn't quite there yet. So we were able to use the internet as this excuse to talk about whatever we wanted, because everything kind of touches the internet anyway at this point. So we could get pretty far away from the internet and still be nominally a show about the internet. So, I mean, show about the internet sounds very boring. And everybody just assumed that it was like we were reviewing gadgets or something. We just tried to find stories about people who were doing something interesting or funny or had a sad experience or were engaged in some life mission that was fascinating to us, and talk about them and talk to them, learn about their lives, and use the internet as the pretense to talk to them.
Right. Yeah. I would say that was a big focal point in a lot of the episodes I listened to. It would be about things like scammers or hacking or phishing or someone going viral on Twitter. And you would start talking about that, but it would unfold into a story about their lives or like what they were experiencing in the world. So super fascinating. So it started in 2014. Did you know PJ before the show began? How did you find him as your co-host?
We worked at WNYC together on a podcast called On the Media, which was a media analysis show. We were both producers, and we discovered sort of common cause very quickly. We both were pretty disenchanted with the actual work we were doing. We weren't super in love because, like, it was a very different kind of show. It was a weekly news show that was an hour long, and every week we would do five or six segments that were like, this is what's going on. This is how it's related to the media. There was no storytelling aspect to it. So we always tried to sneak that stuff into the show wherever we could. But frequently, we did not. We did not accomplish that because it was a show that had very strong personalities as hosts. They had their own ideas of what they wanted to do. So it was kind of us trying to do that. And then the way that that opportunity, the Reply All opportunity, came up is there was a competition at WNYC that they said, hey, we want everybody in the building to, if they want, pitch an idea for a show. And then there's going to be like a judging panel. And if they like it, then we'll make it, or at least pilot it. And so we pitched something that was sort of like Reply All, very different in execution what we pitched. It was like a daily news show about internet stuff. And we did not win this contest. A podcast called Death, Sex, and Money, which is still going today, was one of the winners. That's hosted by a woman named Anna Sale. And then our boss at the time was like, hey, listen, I don't have any extra money and I'm not able to like pay you more. I'm not able to give you guys extra time. But if you guys want to make this show that you talked about, I will try and free up space to make the show. So we made a show called TLDR for about a year. I think we did 36 episodes, 38 episodes. It's sort of like the dry run version of Reply All. We did radio stories that were similar, but like rather than being 20 to 40 to 90 minutes or however long our longest episodes were, we would do some that were like 6 minutes and some that were like 15. They were generally pretty short. And then Alex Bloomberg, who was a producer at This American Life and one of the founders of Planet Money, founded a podcast company called Gimlet. And he knew PJ because PJ was an intern at This American Life. Also, his wife worked at On the Media with us. So he was like, hey, do you guys want to try doing something like this over here? And we were like, yeah, sure. Because public media is hard to work in. The money is really tight. There are very specific mandates about what they want to make. And I think, especially at the time, they had no idea what the hell we were talking about or why we were making the show or why anybody would want to listen to it. So we didn't get much support and we didn't have any money. So this guy said, hey, you know, I'll give you a travel budget. And that was like really all we needed to hear.
Just as a side note, I was once in journalism and yeah, not a lot of money, high stress. So you and PJ, you're doing it on your own just for fun, doing TLDR. And then you got this opportunity through Alex Bloomberg to start Reply All.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you guys go for it? I mean, it was a considerable amount of your time and money. It didn't really seem like a lot of other people were supporting it. 2014, the internet landscape was very different. I would not say that it was like in the 80s where it's like if you emailed people, you were a creep. People were using it and they were using it for work and school and for social stuff. But it wasn't like it is now. Now I feel like it's normal for people to have a Reddit account and for people to be on Twitter all the time. Back in 2014, it wasn't quite like that. So were you nervous about this? Was it just like a fun project? What actually motivated you to give up blocks of time that you could have been using to make money or work on different shows? Why'd you do it?
Well, I mean, I feel a little different than most people. I am 45 now. So like I was around before the internet was like the internet. I'm an old man. When I was like 11 or 12 was when I first got on the internet. I was using a modem to dial up to a local bulletin board. It was all text. I had to use a phone. I had to call a phone number. There were four phone lines. So they were constantly busy because people were always trying to connect. So I had to just dial over and over again. Windows used to come with a program. I think it was called Koala.
So you're like original internet user, not just original internet Reply All podcast host. You're like OG.
Yeah. I mean, I was so young. And it was this thing where like, to me, the internet always felt like a place because it was local. So not only would I like talk to people online every Friday night, we'd all go to the bowling alley and hang out. It was like the internet always felt like home to me. And so I just believed in it as a thing to be working on. And I think PJ had a different experience because he's 6 years younger than me. He's, I think, 37 or 38 now. But it was like, you know, he developed relationships online at an early age too. So like, it just felt like it made perfect sense to do stories about this place. And there was stuff going on the internet that wasn't going on anywhere else. And I don't know, you know, Alex Bloomberg had a little bit of startup money and a little bit of money to pay us and took a chance on us. And I feel like we didn't want to miss that opportunity because making TLDR felt like a bit of a dead end. People weren't super interested in supporting it. Even when we were like, hey, we're leaving the station because we got this offer, the station didn't then say, oh, wait, don't go. We'll support it now. They were just sort of like, are you sure you want to leave? And you're like, that's the offer you're giving us? Are you sure you want to leave? So we just bailed. And I figured like, even if it failed, maybe we would get 6 months worth of making good stories. And that's kind of like, you know, as long as I was making something to be proud of, I feel good about that, you know?
I want to ask you about Reply All and what made it connect with the audience. But you were hanging out in a bowling alley. Like you were like 11, 12, dialing up to the internet, meeting people online, going to a bowling alley. What? Just tell me about
that. You know, I asked my dad about that actually not too long ago. I was like, why did you let me do that? And he was like, I don't know. You know, the thing that I connected to is called MNET. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. The M is short for Michigan, the M in MNET. And I told my dad, I was like, why did you let me do that when I was like a kid? And he was like, you know, I don't know. I figured like it's called MNET, probably has something to do with the University of Michigan. I'm sure everybody's on the up and up. And like, you know, it was the early 90s. Parents were different then. They let you do whatever you want.
Sorry. I think things are a little different now, and I feel like
quite different.
But like, okay. So I feel like now kids meet up with other kids from the internet, right? They get in these little like groups to like go swimming. Those are more normal. When I was a kid on the internet, I feel like that was the height of like YouTube was telling you not to put your full name or actual birthday. People are like on red alert. My mom had like a 2-hour long conversation with me where she's like, you know, Paige, someone on the internet can say they're this and they're not. You could be talking to someone you think is an 11-year-old girl and he's actually a 55-year-old man living in his mother's basement in California. She's like, you got to be careful. I wasn't allowed to have a private email until I think I was like 15. Because
I mean, yeah. I understand that concern. Your mom's not wrong necessarily. It's just like, I think one of the worst things that happened to the internet is that it tried to scale, tried to get bigger and make these all-inclusive spaces when those tiny little places were actually, there was community and responsibility to one another there. I knew the real names of everybody. I knew first and last names of all the people that I was hanging out with. It wasn't like I was hanging out with people who were just, you know, random weirdos. They were like actual people. So it felt, I think, a little safer. But also, I think there was a certain amount of naivete because the AOL chat room didn't really exist yet, or at least wasn't popular. So like that world felt a little different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was my introduction to the internet. My mom did not know about my chats on AOL. I didn't do anything bad. It was just like, I go on and I'd be like 9 or 10. And I think I'd be talking to like 45-year-old people in this chat room. And they were really mad about George Bush. And I was like, I was getting a year old living in like a suburb of Dallas, like Republican. It was a fun time. You know, the actress Halle Berry, she used to go on chat rooms and be like, hey, I'm Halle Berry. And no one would believe her, but it would really be her. Yeah, it would really be her. So apparently like her favorite thing to do on weekends, she'd go into like chat rooms and be like, hey, I'm Halle Berry. And everybody would be like, what's wrong with you? What would Halle Berry be doing on a chat room? Anyway, so you would go meet these people in real life in bowling alleys. Where were the ages of them? Because you were like 11. You were a kid. Were they all also kids or were they like older?
It really ran the gamut. Like there were some people who were full on grown-ups in their probably early 40s, maybe even 50s. And then there were like teenagers like me. And then there were like 20 somethings. And everybody sort of like hung out in their own cliques. And I don't know, it felt sometimes like having like older siblings who were like kind of watching out for you. There were older people who were like kind and gave me guidance. And I remember when I first got on, I was really into punk rock and I was like really into particularly Black Flag at the time. And the first person I ever talked to in a chat room was like, oh yeah, Black Flag, something, something, something. And then they made some reference to it. And that person's name is Todd. I still know him. And I was just like, oh, this is my place. Like, this makes perfect sense to me.
I'm really glad it worked out for you in that way. I feel like the internet, for a lot of kids, you know, kids who are maybe different or are not connecting with their peers in whatever ways, or maybe they are, they're just connecting better with people on the internet. It really allowed them to have a home and a community in ways I feel like you used to not get.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff I could say about the internet, but like, I feel like the way that the trans community has reached the level of acceptance that it has, which is, you know, it's hotly contested at the moment. I don't think it would have been possible without the internet. And I think that that's really amazing. And it gave a lot of people places that felt safe that they could talk to their peers, and that kind of thing couldn't exist. Of course, also Nazis have the same experience where they found places they could be accepted that they wouldn't otherwise. So
I will say at least they have public recordings of it that the FBI can more easily investigate. There's that at least.
That's true.
Okay, I don't want to talk about Nazis on my episode with Alex Goldman. So Reply All, you jumped to that from TLDR, and it connected with your audience in a way your previous show did not. Why was that? Was there like an episode or a moment that got people hooked? Why did people connect with it in a way they didn't with your past show?
Well, there were a couple of things that were working in our favor. One is Alex Blumberg was a known entity in radio and had made Planet Money, which was spectacularly successful. I think he'd won a Peabody for doing The Giant Pool of Money, which was a story about the subprime lending crisis that caused the housing recession in 2008. And it was like a massive landmark radio story because it explained economics in a way that was like very hard for people to grasp at the time. And also, in addition to that, he was doing a podcast at the time he was making Gimlet about making the company. And as a result, people were very invested in the success of this company. They were very invested in seeing what happened to it. So like we had those weird advantages that were people wanted to see us succeed because they wanted to see Alex succeed. And also our first episode came out during the original season one run of Serial, just by coincidence. At the time, there were a lot of people who were like, oh my God, I'm really into podcasts now. What's the next podcast I should listen to? And there were a lot of articles that were like 10 podcasts to listen to now that you finished Serial. And we were on a lot of those. And I think that that helped us quite a bit. And why did people connect with it? I don't know. I think other people felt the same way we did a little bit about the internet. And we just came along at the right time. I feel like I have been early or late to all cultural moments in my life, with the exception of this one moment of making Reply All. I was like, we were very much on time. We just happened to pop up when like the thinking around the internet shifted, and it was very lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say that you were born at the right time in a lot of ways for the internet. Like you were born early enough to be able to go enjoy communities in ways that were safe. I would not ever go meet up people from the internet in a bowling alley.
Like, I don't think I would now.
I've made friends through the internet, of course, but they've all been people I've had mutual real life friends with, right? Anyway, that's beside the point. So you guys hit a cultural milestone with the internet. How did it feel to be at the forefront of it, to really be leading, I would say, a new wave in how people experienced media and just like being able to connect with others?
It felt a couple different ways. One, it felt really good. Like, I just love making radio. I find it to be so rewarding when I'm able to do it sort of in the way that I want and with people that I trust. We lucked into an amazing, amazing team, like just people who showed up and were so incredibly talented and made it so much more rewarding, because I love making radio, but I think in a lot of ways, I'm kind of a radio dummy. There's a lot that I don't know how to do well. And I feel like we got people who are just really fantastic editors and writers. And we were so lucky in that respect. Fia Benin is an amazing, she was like a really thoughtful voice. And she always gave us great suggestions to make the stories more human. Shruthi is an amazing reporter. Damiano is an amazing reporter. Tim Howard, our editor, was really incredible. TJ is also an amazing editor. So we were very lucky that we had like a really good team, because there's a lot of ways that when you're sort of doing it by yourself, you can f up, and having people who know what they're doing is good. And then, I mean, you know, I think a lot of what people liked was the relationship that we had on the radio. So I think that that also helped, is that everybody wants to hang out with their pals on the radio. That's kind of, I think, how radio, like how a lot of podcasts thrive, is by having strong personalities and strong relationships that exist within a show, if that makes sense.
It totally does. I would say for me, that was a huge reason why I enjoyed Reply All. I mean, of course, I liked the stories. There's several interesting stories I want to ask you about, like Shine On You, Crazy Goldman. I want to know how you got clearance for that. Get into that in a second. Just you and PJ, you had such amazing chemistry. It was electric. I was a huge fan. And that makes me wonder. So you were the host of the show for roughly 8 years. As people, you know, got deeper into listening, especially with the very, 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 very great relationship you had with PJ, I felt like I knew both of you. Like I didn't, but I felt like I knew who both of you were, your lives, your personalities, you know, as you get when you listen to a radio show or you read a book that you really like, you feel connected with a character. At the end of the day, it's still a character, because I'm a normal person. Recognize that. Do you have an experience where like, people didn't understand that you were radio characters and tried to connect with you?
Yeah, all the time. Okay. And like, to me, I think that's us doing a good job. Like, that's us succeeding. If people connect with us as the characters, Alex and PJ, that means that we're making the thing we want to make. It's a little weird, because I mean, the person I am on the radio is like a sort of heightened version of who I am in real life. But also, like, a lot of my real life is in it. People knew about the birth of my son. People knew about, you know, a lot of stuff that we talked about very publicly on the show. And
how you take showers was when I remember, like, an episode.
Right, how I shower. And a result of that is people would talk to me about things that I didn't remember divulging publicly. And it was a little disorienting. But generally, people were cool. Every once in a while, there was a level of familiarity, both online and in person, that made me a little uncomfortable. But that being said, like, I can count on two hands the number of times I've like been recognized in public. That's one of the benefits of making a radio show, is that no one knows what you look like anyway. So it wasn't so bad.
that's something I was wondering about actually when I was listening to your show. I was like, I bet these guys have to deal with a lot of parasocial relationships. Just because it's like, I feel like when you have news anchors or radio shows, I feel like you both centered your lives in a way I feel like is unique. It was really wonderful. I loved listening to it. But yeah, I felt like you probably had to deal with a lot of parasocial relationships, like people feeling like they knew you or like you were friends when you had no idea who they were.
Right. And again, it can be weird because people like, because, you know, they know a certain amount about your personal life and then are suddenly talking to you about it. And I'm just like, hey, like, can we take a beat here to appreciate that, like, you and I have never met? And like, I know that this is on me because I talk about this stuff, but like, yeah, we don't know each other. And that was not really a consideration a lot of times.
I have this theory that people who are singers or people who are radio show hosts or people who do anything with audio tend to have more parasocial relationships than with people who are actors. Because with actors, there's a level of like, oh, this isn't me. This is a character I'm playing. But with singers, with radio shows, with audio, you're literally in their ear. They're listening to you on AirPods, on headphones while they're walking. I just feel like it's a little different. Can you tell me about the first time you got recognized in public or recognized from your show and what that was like?
I always got really uncomfortable with it because, like, I would say that I'm like a person who, a good example of a thing that makes me like really uncomfortable is gift giving. Like, I really don't like giving or receiving gifts.
Really?
Because, yeah, I really
This one's like,
not.
Here's a super nice chocolate box, Alex. It's like a bowling alley. I don't know. I don't know what you like.
I understand. I like absolutely understand the intention. It's so kind always. But what I feel when I am given a gift by anybody, it doesn't matter how close they are to me, what I feel is like someone is standing in front of me expectantly waiting for me to go, oh my God, this is great. I love it so much. I feel this expectation that makes me like just choke. Like, it's really hard for me. So I would just panic mostly when I met people. And I have to say, like, I think I developed a bit of social anxiety from making the show. Because again, I felt this weird expectation to deliver something to people in a certain way. So I actually started doing subconsciously, I didn't even realize it, but I had it pointed out to me that people were like, you know, when you are like at a party, you talk to people like you're interviewing them. And I was like, I had no idea, but
It's not a bad thing,
but I feel like I had this level of social remove that I created for myself because I felt like a little uncomfortable with being Alex Goldman, the podcaster, and instead just wanted to be Alex Goldman, the guy. But since I felt like there was this expectation, I would just be the podcaster, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just want to say your body language when you were talking about being recognized was very interesting. You were kind of tense. I can tell it. It's something you were not at all comfortable with. Even when I was telling you I was such a big fan, your reaction was like, oh.
But I mean, it's also like kind of ridiculous because why would you go into a public facing career if you have a problem with being recognized? It's silly, but it's also like just kind of who I am. I just like telling stories. I just like telling stories. The recognition part is mostly a means to an end. It's like being able to make the thing I want to make.
Yeah, you're a journalist. You're not a performer.
I mean, it's mostly what I've got. So like, I don't have any room to complain. Like, it's a pretty good deal I've got going on. Because like I said, I don't get recognized much. I've been making radio for 14 years and like I've been recognized, you know, 8 or 9 times.
Well, I actually feel like those times would be more jarring than if it happened all the time because it's like you don't know when to expect it. So I feel like that is what leads to anxiety. If you're super famous, you at least have the expectation like, oh, if I go outside, this is going to happen. And if I disguise myself, it's fine. But if you're just like walk in and you're like, I don't know, buying a bagel, getting coffee, and someone's like, hey, Alex Goldman, I'm your biggest fan. I bet it's uncomfortable.
We would have really late nights and we were often really exhausted. You know, by the end of the show, like on our production nights, like the night the episode was released, we'd be there till like 1, 2 in the morning sometimes getting the show finished. And I remember one time I was taking the last train back to New Jersey and it was like the last train leaves Penn Station at 12:30 and I was exhausted and kind of grumpy because it was a long day. So I went someplace at Penn Station, got some Pringles out of the can, and I was like sitting on the train and just eating like a slob. Just like, I was like beyond caring. I was like, people can sort of, you know, I don't care if anybody looks at me or whatever. I'm starving and I'm grumpy and I want to be in bed. And there was a guy just giving me the stink eye the whole time. You know what? Fuck you. Don't look at me. I'm just some guy. Leave me the fuck alone. And as he was getting up to get off the train, he was like, are you Alex Goldman?
What'd you say? Have you
ever, I was like no, I'm I not. Just was like, I was like, oh yeah. And he was like, I love the show. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. I mean, what can you say? It was just like, thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks. I am me. I run a cool show. Awesome. Let me get back to my Pringles. Oh, that's so interesting. So you guys would have these like late nights. You'd be, you know, publishing episodes. Let's do a quick speed run of your show for my listeners before anything else. Like, what were your favorite stories? What were the hardest stories to publish? My personal favorite is The Case of the Missing Hit, but that's everybody's favorite. It's a great episode.
Yeah, that's everybody's favorite. My favorite stories were the ones that probably took the longest and felt like we accomplished the most. But that's not totally true now that I think about it. There were some that I just thought were really funny. I like really like a bit. So anytime that we did something that was like stupid or ridiculous to get the episode done or like make the episode more compelling, I was always into that. So like we did an episode about this guy who had a car. His car would freeze every time he played the show 99% Invisible.
I remember that episode.
He couldn't figure out why. So then we made a bunch of fake podcasts to test it out. And like, we didn't need to do that. That was like a stupid lark that made no logical sense in terms of actually solving the problem, but it was a lot of fun. And that's the kind of stuff I like to do. Snapchat Thief, which is a pretty big episode in which this person got threatened by some weirdo on the internet to give her account to him. And it turned out that he was part of this culture of people who buy, sell, and trade what they call OG Twitter accounts or any social media accounts. The OG accounts are the ones that are like the username, like Lizard was this person's username. And so that was just crazy because, you know, I'd been an internet reporter for quite a while and I had no clue that something like that existed and thought it was fascinating and hilarious that these little kids were obsessed with those. Of course, there was an episode where we went to India to meet some telephone scammers, which was a big, scary experience. That one was probably the one that I produced that people were most into. Another one of the small ones that I really liked was this one where this woman, her domain name expired and we were responsible for getting it back for her, or like I took on the job of getting it back for her. And it was like the domain name expired and some company in Japan picked it up. And so I was like calling Japan with a translator every morning at 6 a.m. so we could get people, or like 5 a.m. to get people at the right time. And when we finally got it, it just felt like a small but fun accomplishment to have gotten this thing. And also just like we were having a lot of fun making it. It was rare that there was an episode that felt easy, and that one felt really easy. And so that one always sticks in my mind very fondly.
I will have to listen. That's insane.
It's called Good Job, Alex.
Good job. Well, good job, Alex. It sounds like you did a good job, Alex. Yeah. Oh, by the way, just for my listeners, the one he's talking about, the Indian scammers, that one's called Long Distance, right? It was Long Distance. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that one was a wild trip. Can't believe you went to India and you checked out a scam center. And
I realized like after it was all done, just sort of how ridiculous the degree of like how like it, at the time I was just like, well, whatever, this is my job. And then after it came out, I was like, oh, that was like ridiculous what we did. But yeah, it was very fun and exciting and stressful. And I had never been to India and I learned a lot about the world and I learned a lot about the people who are in those call centers. And the next time that you are mean to them, just remember that they are usually being exploited and don't make very much money. It was really intense.
Okay. So actually, I have kind of a question about this. So it's actually illegal to solicit to minors. So if you get a spam call and you say, hey, I'm under 16, it's illegal to solicit to minors. They are mandated to take you off all of their lists. Am I like hurting a scammer by saying that? Is it better if I just don't pick up?
You're not hurting a scammer, but also they're not going to take you off their list because the thing they're doing is illegal already. The scammers are scamming. It doesn't matter if you say, take me off your list because I'm a minor. You're still going to get the calls.
No, I heard that and I believed it. And I will say doing it, I have gotten myself taken off some lists. Like I've gotten way less calls. But maybe
maybe they're wrong.
No, maybe they just write like, this girl is annoying. Don't call her. Or this girl is obviously not 16. Don't call her. Yeah, okay. I'm gonna have to revisit that after. So when I was looking at all your stories, all the ones I really loved and the ones I feel like really changed my life, I was like, okay. I just need to pick a few to ask questions about, because I'm sure Alex is busy, does not have all the answers on my questions. I have to know, how did you and PJ get clearance for Shine On You, Crazy Goldman? Were you microdosed LSD? What was the process of that like?
That process is called asking for forgiveness. We just did it. When we first started making the show, we were just like, let's do whatever. I know that for a while we were working on an episode where we bought a gun off of Facebook.
Did you have access for it? It's very easy to get a gun here.
I mean, New York and New Jersey have very stringent laws, but PJ's from the Philly area. And it was very legal there. So we were like, let's go to Philadelphia or let's go to Pennsylvania and buy a gun. We didn't end up doing it, but we were like really close. We really wanted to.
What were you going to do when you bought the gun?
We were just going to do it to prove how easy it was and like how unregulated it is, because it's extremely unregulated.
Yes, very easy. I'm in Texas. But all you have to do is say, I want a gun, and they legally have to give you a gun.
Right. In 2014 or 2015, whenever we did that, whenever we were working on that, it felt much crazier to us that you could do that. Now it just feels like, oh, you can get every kind of illegal thing on the internet all the time, no matter what. So that was one we were working on at the time. We just kind of like, we were left to our own devices. Our editor was our friend, and he was much more interested in making a good show than he was in trying to make sure we weren't, you know, getting up to mischief. In fact, the more mischief, the better, really, which is something I still believe in pretty strongly. Like, the more goofy stuff you get up to, the better the show's going to be.
Well, as someone who's, you know, been a longtime fan and a lot of other people, you were right on the money. It was a very fun, fun show. So you gun story you didn't end up publishing. Were there any other stories like that that you can think of where you were both doing something crazy or you were like talking about it? What stories didn't make the final cut?
A lot. I mean, okay. Many dozens of stories. And I know this is ridiculous because like they're stories I'm never going to revisit, but I always feel nervous to talk about them because I'm like, what if one day I get like a lead on that? Which is ridiculous. Like, that's not going to happen. But like, what if one day something incredible happens that allows me to do that story? Let's see. What are some that we killed?
I think the biggest one. Anything you tell me, by the way.
I mean, it's not a big deal.
Okay.
I think the biggest one for me is someone on a forum told us about, or not told us, someone on a forum posted a message about this tombstone in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area that said, Roberta Lucannon, still ritually mutilated, and then gave date of birth, date of death. And we were all like, what the f- could that mean? So we started looking into it. The more I looked into it, I found out that Roberta Lucannon was assigned male at birth and came out as trans later in life and had a very difficult relationship with her family. The more I tried to find out about it, like the weirder it got. I reached out to her family and I talked to someone in her family on Facebook for a little while who said, yeah, the family lore is that she murdered her dad. And I was like, what? Is that so? And then there was also some sort of information about like some arrests that took place and like some violent crime that she got in. I think she was an addict. Like, this person had like a very eventful life and was also like a total mystery because they were estranged from their family. And I think their partner had also passed away. And I was like very interested to learn about this person, but no one wanted to talk to me and no one really knew her. So it was really hard. It was one of those things where like I worked on it for years and it just never came together, which was tough. But there, you know, there are a million stories that we would start, get some way through, and find out the answer was boring, or find out that there is no answer or no easy answer or no answer that we could possibly attain. So we would have to give up on it. And that happened, I would say, more often than not. Like, you know, a lot of stories were not finished. I wanted to do, right toward the end, actually, I really wanted to do a story about workplace surveillance, like the ways that companies are surveilling you and ways to get around it. But the more the story went on, the more I realized that like most workplace surveillance is actually like white collar workplace surveillance is really easy to evade because, you know, they check your mouse movements. So you can get like little mouse mover devices and things like that because people are working remotely and whatnot. The actual difficult workplace surveillance to evade, it's pretty much impossible, is blue collar work. Like Amazon workers have to make sure that they're timing their trips to the bathroom so they don't get docked because they have to scan something every X amount of minutes in the warehouse. Or post office workers have to scan packages, a certain amount of packages an hour, or they get docked. And there's like no convenient way to get around it. And so, I don't know. Another part of it was that I wanted to talk to Spotify about workplace surveillance because I wanted to opt out of some workplace surveillance they had on us, and they didn't want to talk to me and they wouldn't opt out of it. So that was another reason that it died. But that was one that I was always interested in.
So for Spotify, how did you feel about the whole working environment there after Spotify acquired Gimlet? The show was, I think, 6 or 7. It was pretty established, right? Am I remembering?
It wasn't that old. I think it was 2019 or 2020 okay. when it got sold. I didn't like it. I didn't like working for Spotify very much. Spotify.
Spotify. Okay.
It was a very different, they had very different incentives than we did. Our incentive was to like make the best thing possible. Their incentive was we want to get subscribers on Spotify. That was the only thing that they wanted. That was the only metric for success for them. And like that didn't matter for us. And it was like them trying to put more ads on the show. And it was sort of a death by a thousand cuts kind of thing. Like we used to record our own ads, and then they started doing programmatic advertising so that, you know, they could stuff more ads into the show. And it was like a lower lift for them. It was easier for them to do. And that wasn't great. Like I didn't think it was a good experience for the listener, which is really all I'm interested in providing. Also, the ad rates were better for our host recorded ads, but they didn't care because we were making these tiny deals and they were making deals with like Coca-Cola to do $2 million worth of advertising across, you know, 600 podcasts. And then, you know, we lost approval of our advertisers. Like we didn't get to decide who was advertising on our show. So, you know, we would get ads for military recruitment. We would get ads for Northrop Grumman. We would get ads for Exxon. Things that like I feel pretty icky about and do not want advertising on our show, and things we might report on. So that wasn't great. Overall, I didn't really like it. I didn't think that it benefited us in any tangible way as show creators. But also, you know, it was a startup. So you know that like money's tight and you're always trying to figure out a way to either make like a sustainable business or to make something that someone's going to want to purchase and then you make a bunch of money, right? So our bosses wanted the company to be purchased and to make a bunch of money. I would have been fine making a sustainable business and not selling to Spotify, but it wasn't my company, so I didn't get to say whether we were sold or not. So I don't know. I certainly never want to work in an environment like that again. So I will not.
Yeah, again, looking at your body language, which is very interesting as you were talking about Spotify. Again, tense, not happy looking. It sounds like a really suffocating environment for you.
I mean, for the most part, not much changed. It's like we didn't change offices. The big difference is like when we were just Gimlet, we were like big fish in a small pond. We had a lot of control over what we made and how we made it. And the CEO was someone we'd known for, you know, 10 years. And we could go say hello to him and ask him for stuff and tell him stuff we were unhappy with. And then we moved to a company with 4,500 employees and they didn't know who we were or what we did. They weren't journalists, and tech is historically incredibly hostile to journalism. And that was also the case at Spotify. And if you look at the slate of podcasts they continue to make now, as opposed to what they were making with us, they make shows with celebrities. And I think that that works well for them. They make money. They're very low cost to make. They're not interested in making the kind of show we make. And I don't think they realized that until after they bought us. And they also just like really didn't like, I mean, we were bought by them maybe 6 months or a year before the Joe Rogan show was bought by them. And they didn't get that they had become a media company. So when people started complaining about Joe Rogan and the toxicity of his views, they were totally blindsided. They had no idea why people were upset. We were just like, where have you been? What are you guys up to? So I don't know. I would not go back if I had any choice, which right now I do because no big companies want to buy podcasts anyway. So win-win, I feel like.
All right. If you say it's a win-win, I'll agree with you. Okay. Have you heard the term wild, wild west for the internet?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Kind of what you're talking about. It's not to the same extent it has been for the overall internet, but it used to be you could just go on the web, literally find anything you want. There were no ads. There were no paywalls. Everything was so easy. You have a deeper experience of this than I do because you're about 15 years older than me and started using the internet. I was also an early adopter of the internet. I started using it at like 7 or 8 and super easy to find anything you wanted. No ads. The most annoying things were just pop-ups. Like that was
right.
It was like, you want to make sure you don't accidentally download a virus to your mom's work computer. But past that, it's easy to hide history. It's easy to like hide your identity. Now it's different. I feel like you cannot assume that you are anonymous on the internet anymore. Unless you go to like a public library, someone is going to be able to track you down. Someone's going to be able to get your Wi-Fi. You have to go through a lot of, What has your experience with that been like? And how do you feel about that with Reply All? Because Reply All, I feel like, grew with internet culture. Like as you were doing the show, you got to be on the forefront of all of these different trends that were happening. What was it like to study the internet as it was changing? And also, how do you feel like you guys shaped internet culture?
Oh, I don't think we shaped internet culture at all.
Really? What about Email Debt Forgiveness Day? That is so good. I celebrate that.
All right. Well, then maybe we did that. I think that we were a little Pollyanna-ish about the internet, honestly. I think that we were both like, the internet is this amazing, amazing tool of connection, and it brings people together in like unexpected and wonderful ways. And that was the kind of reporting we did, not always, but a lot. And I think that one of the things that we didn't do much of was report on the terrible stuff about it. And I think it was because we so enjoyed the community that it gave us as kids and as adults that we were willing to overlook that. And I wish that we'd done more of it, honestly.
Really? I remember something that was so incredible about your show to me was that although you both definitely reported on some darker stories and you were comfortable exploring on those spaces, for the most part, it was this funny, joyful show. I felt like every time a new episode dropped, I'd drive to the hospital I was working at and I'd listen to it. And I just felt like I was just transported to this area of joy. Honestly, it gave me such joy, but I would say it was a very joyful, funny, positive, happy, uplifting show. Would you really have wanted to delve deeper into the darker corners of life and of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I think that we didn't see a lot of the bad stuff. Like we weren't cognizant of it. And I don't think that a show necessarily can't be joyful if you're talking about things that are bad. I don't believe that that's necessarily how it works. I do think that you can talk about terrible things that are happening with a level of joy. I think that one of the things that I like the best in a radio story is a story that starts happy or feels happy, and then there's like a sad moment, or a story that feels sad, and then there's a happy moment. I like a world that's complex and isn't like clean silliness all the time. I do like silliness, obviously, but I just feel like the world is a lot more than just us clowning around. And especially the internet is a lot more than us just clowning around. I just feel like we saw the internet as this fun agent for cool stuff. And it is and was and it continues to be. But I also think that there were things that we ignored that maybe we shouldn't.
Like what?
If that makes sense.
No, like what things did you ignore?
The way that companies like Facebook were, you know, using dark patterns to manipulate people into clicking on stuff. I mean, that stuff was pretty vicious. And I feel like we should have been more aware of it. And we weren't. I mean, that's a big one for me, honestly. You know, we talked about going viral all the time, but part of going viral was manipulation. And we were focused solely on the manipulation from the user side and not much on manipulation through the company side, which happened all the time and was really bad and caused terrible things in culture, in technology. It continues to. I mean, Facebook is a fucking nightmare. It's impossible to navigate. It's full of the most toxic, terrible shit you can see in the world. I think that there's like a lot of bad stuff that happened as a result of that. And we were more focused on other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, again, it's part of how the internet has changed. Maybe 10 years ago, you could have used the internet and not seen any of that. Now it's just kind of in your face. All the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I mean, there was plenty of reporting on it at the time, and we just weren't paying attention to it.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, I'm kind of glad it shaped out the way it did, but I can understand how you feel now. I wish you guys are still recording, so you could have done an episode on Elon taking over Twitter.
I pitched an entire show on that.
Really?
About a year ago, like right when it happened, like November 2022, maybe was when he bought it. I was like, there's a story here. And especially because at that moment, which there was like this situation going on where tech people never talk to the press ever. And it was like a brief window where people at Twitter were talking to the press and it just felt huge. And I wanted to jump on it and be a part of it. But like the people I was pitching to were like, it's too expensive. We don't want to get sued. There's a whole list of reasons why we can't do this or like why it will take too long. And by the time I got people kind of interested in it, it's like the moment had passed. Like it really needed to happen right when he took over.
Yeah, you were telling me there's a show you also considered pitching about getting sued by people. Like every season would be about a lawsuit. That would have been a really good starting off point into that show.
That's true.
Trying to concede
being sued by the richest man in the world.
That stuff is always interesting. You know, Grimes won her custody battle against him. I was surprised that happened. So you don't know. Maybe if a little guy would have won in that scenario, if you get sued by Musk.
Did she win her custody battle?
Yeah.
I didn't know that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I was shocked because, you know, it's her versus the richest man in the world. But
right.
Yeah. I'll need to like publish a retraction in case that was just a clickbait headline I read. That'd be interesting. Yeah, I was following that story. Oh my gosh. Okay, wait, what other shows did you pitch? After a reply all finalized, just tell me, what were some other things you wanted to work on? We're going to talk about the show ending in a second, but what were some of the other things you were like thinking about doing?
I wanted to make a show where I would make a band go into a studio and they would have 90 minutes to record a song in a genre that is not their genre.
That would be awesome. Someone needs to greenlight that. That's incredible.
Everybody said no.
Why?
Like right up. Too expensive because bands cost a lot of money. There'd be arguments with the record labels over the licensing rights to the songs. Bands take themselves too seriously and wouldn't want to do it. There were all these reasons that people gave me. And, you know, I talked to like music people too. Like I talked to Apple and other places and they were just like, yeah, it's a fun idea. No one will ever do it.
I think the suing idea is funny, but that one, I'm like, yeah, I can understand why no one would touch that. This one, it's like enjoyable. I love musical episodes. I love musicals. Oh my God. I'm so sad you didn't get to publish that. Okay, wait. Okay. So you and PJ, you were together for about eight years on the show. Eight years. Just tell me about that. What was it like to work with someone so closely? How did your relationship and friendship deepen? Did you guys become like really close friends? Were you hanging outside of the show a lot? Just tell me about that.
No, actually the opposite. Like it became much harder. The more we spent time together at work, the harder it was because it, you know, there were a lot of petty squabbles, I think. And, you know, by the time the day was done, by the time the episode was done and we'd spent 14 hours together on that last day, everybody was just like wiped out. We all just like wanted to go home and see our families or whatever. And also like I moved to New Jersey and I started a family. So that was another part of it. It's like, I had a son in 2015, which was like months after the show started, like maybe 3 months, and then a daughter in 2018. And, you know, we were busy doing kid stuff. And PJ lived in Brooklyn and was just kind of doing his thing. And all of that added up to us just not spending nearly as much time together. So, yeah, I mean, that was a really hard relationship to maintain because there was an on-air component to it and an off-air component to it and expectations on that relationship based on our on-air and off-air relationships. It was hard and not very fun to deal with. That part of the expectation from other people really sucked and I didn't like it at all. You know, PJ and I had an antagonistic relationship on the radio. And one part of that was that a lot of people felt very comfortable being antagonistic toward me in real life.
Really?
And I was like, yeah, guys, you don't. I was just like, you know, you don't know me. So can you not do that?
Oh, like, what would people do? Would they like?
People would like, I mean, it was more online than offline. But people would like try and goof with me like and insult me like they were my friends. And I was like, and I even had someone say to me once, like, oh, it's fine when PJ is mean to you, but when I am, and I was like, yeah, we've known each other for 10 years. That's absolutely correct. Fucking weirdo.
I shouldn't laugh, but it's so weird. So, you know, longtime listener, I always saw it like as brotherly, like teasing each other, roasting, that level of closeness. The idea that anyone who is not that level of closeness could make fun of you in that way. It's so weird.
In my most charitable moments, I'm like, well, the reason that that person felt comfortable doing that is because we created this thing that we made them feel a part of. That is a big success to me. And I try to remember that anytime people transgress what I think of as like pretty normal boundaries. I'm like, well, the reason they're doing that is because we like made a thing where they were like, oh, I feel like a part of this. But that doesn't change the fact that like, I don't want you making fun of me. I don't know who you are.
What I would think of as like normal transgression would be like someone, like if you shared your son's birthday on the show 2 years ago and someone was like, hey, happy birthday, Alex Goldman's son. That's kind of weird, but that's like also like, okay, that's just part of, you know, being a radio show host. What you're talking about, that's just weird. That's not something I would think to expect as a radio host, someone being like, oh, it's okay when PJ makes fun of you, so it's not okay for me, random guy behind a computer screen and username.
I didn't really contend with what it would be like to be known. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't something that I ever expected, and it wasn't something that I considered until like well after it actually started. So it's like, if I knew everything then that I know now, would I have been as open on the radio? Maybe not, but that ship's kind of sailed. Like, it's already all out there. So I feel like there's no point not to continue, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Do you like the public pressures that were being put on you? By pressures, I just mean people like getting really friendly with you, getting kind of in your business. Do you feel like that impacted or influenced your relationship with PJ as you were developing the show? Because honestly, like, you talk about drifting apart. I would have never been able to guess that up until the whole thing. I really felt like you both, I would have never guessed. Like, what you're describing is actually shocking to me.
I think that PJ liked the public component of it more than I did. Mm-hmm. The public pressure might have, in as far as like, we constantly felt like we needed to one-up ourselves so that we didn't get stale, so that people wouldn't lose interest. Like, that was pressure. And there was like a weird, there were some weird expectations that people put on the show. Anytime we broke format or did something experimental, people would be like, I don't like this. Why are you doing this different thing? That happened a lot. And that felt frustrating because we were sort of like, well, the whole reason that you like the show is because we did the thing we wanted to do. But I mean, you get a certain amount of time to make a show, and then it sort of calcifies into this thing that people expect. And that expectation's hard. I think that anybody who makes stuff experiences that. Musicians, filmmakers, television, anybody, if they make something that's successful, people develop an expectation of it. And if you aren't meeting that expectation, people can be hostile. So that pressure, I think, made things tough. And like, also, like, we were both just really scared of fucking up and making something bad or whatever. That was hard. But I don't know that it affected our personal relationship that much. Our personal relationship was much more just us bickering.
I feel like sometimes when you're creating something like this, it's weird to get negative feedback on it. I guess the listeners are listening to the show and they're technically contributing to its success, but it's like, you're not paying me. What do you mean you've got these feelings about what I'm doing? Don't tell me that.
It's funny that you said you went to the subreddit, because I feel like that place was really incredibly unpleasant for me to experience.
I wanted to ask if you had ever read stuff written about you on Reddit, but then I was like, I shouldn't ask him that. But now I'm going to. Did you ever read stuff about you on Reddit?
Yeah, and I tried to like participate and be open with them, and I was like, eh, this is diminishing returns. These people think that I'm a podcast factory and not a person. So I'm all set on this. And it's funny, I saw someone on Reddit the other day in the podcast subreddit. He was one of the mods of the thing. He was like, you know, Alex turned into such an after PJ left the show. Like, he was like so mean online after PJ left the show. And I think that in some ways that's true, because people had these expectations of me and would like ask weird, what I felt invasive questions. And so my response would be, f*** off. Like, it's none of your business. And I would say, f*** off. If someone asked me a question I felt like was deeply inappropriate about my personal relationship with a person who was no longer working with, I felt very comfortable saying, f*** off. But that my relationship with that person was like an integral part of the thing I made, and they were offended by it. My unwillingness to talk about it with them.
I mean, I think, you know, I feel like you are right to tell someone it's not your business, because ultimately, it's never anyone else's business what you're going through and what your life is like. And personally speaking, I was, of course, really sad when he left the show. But I was never like big of a fan I was of it. I would have never written to the show and been like, hey, tell me what's going on, or even posted on a subreddit, because like, that's really nosy and it's no one else's business.
I still get emails to this day.
That's so weird.
People telling me that I ruined the show. And that I threw my friend under the bus. I still get those.
How do you feel about that? I mean, Repile was such a big part of your life and your career and your career trajectory. How does it make you feel now?
I don't know. I'm working through that. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
We don't have to talk about it. I just,
I mean, it's not like I'm not trying to avoid the subject. I just legitimately don't know how to answer the question. How do I feel about the show? Very proud of some of the things I made. Very sad about a lot of it.
Can you tell me about PJ leaving the show? What was that like?
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. It was really bad. I mean, I knew right away that it was going to be something where people were going to be really shitty about it because everybody had an opinion about it. And to this day, no one has really much insight into it because none of the reporting on it was very good because we kept it to ourselves because it's no one's business.
Yeah. Mind your own business, everybody.
I mean, the short version is there was a very public thing where PJ was accused of bullying some people at the company. And as a result, he left the show, and as did Shruthi. And it was terrible, easily among the worst years of my life, maybe the worst. Negatively affected every part of my life in ways that continue to echo. And it was really hard for a lot of reasons. And part of the reason was Gimlet had just been sold the year before to Spotify. And Alex Blumberg, who was our boss, had stepped down as CEO of the company and installed someone else. And no one at Spotify, nor Alex, nor the current CEO, was like willing to make a public statement about it. They expected us to do it. And it felt really, they simultaneously expected us to say something and to do it within some pretty strict guidelines in terms of what we were and weren't allowed to say. I think people would have been a lot more satisfied with the show we made if we were sort of not given those guardrails. Because we made a show after he left the show. We made an episode which was like, hey, this is what happened. But it was incredibly unsatisfying because we kept having all the actual explanation cut because they wouldn't let us talk. And I don't know, you know, it was tough. Emmanuel, who replaced PJ, is a wonderful person, an incredibly talented journalist. Our chemistry was very different and simply not the same. That's what people wanted. And that's what people got furious about. They were very angry. And, you know, again, since like, I'm not going to talk about the private aspects of it, of which there are many, it created this vacuum of information, which allowed people to speculate about all of it. So it's like, oh, well, you know, there are a lot of opinions that are like, you know, the show got woke, or Alex tried to kick PJ off the show, or there's like a lot of opinions, all of which are wrong because they're like way too complex. The real version is just like hard working with someone, a period. And it's harder for many, many years. But like I said, you know, the show became leaden with expectation as it grew. And there was a strong expectation that we would always be working together. So when that wasn't the case, like, I just felt like everyone was mad at me all the time. And it wasn't fun to make anymore.
Yeah. For the record, I just want to say to me as a listener, not going to comment or even talk about the situation. If people want to read about it, they can. But you really seemed pretty blameless. It just seemed like you were just normal host trying to do your job. Bunch of stuff came, shook up the whole show. I think you did a really good job considering everything. And actually, now I have to wonder. So you were super open about everything in your life on the show. It just, I feel like, very freely giving. Like, you created, I feel like, a very personal connection with your audience. Do you feel like suddenly cutting them off from those details, like maybe there was a level of entitlement from them? Like, Alex always tells us everything that's going on. Suddenly he's not. Like, we're bad about it.
Sure. And I understand that. But it's just like, that's where the Alex character ended up biting me in the ass. It's like, I did a good job of making people feel like they were meeting me, the real me, when they listened to the show. And then when I suddenly wasn't as open with them, it was like a different experience for them. And again, I chalk that up to doing a good job. Like, that's good. That's the thing I wanted to do with the show. But I also didn't ever anticipate something like that whole blow up to happen.
I am so sorry anyone was mean to you on the internet. Like, I remember
acting. I mean, that's what people do on the internet. Like, I understand.
My friend I was telling you about, the one that screamed when I told her I was interviewing you. Remember we were talking about the whole everything? And we were both kind of like, yeah, he just seems really professional now. Like, we didn't think you were withholding. Like, honestly, I just kind of was like, okay, it sounds like this is more of a job than a hobby, was how I kind of felt. A lot of the passion elements of Reply All, it wasn't necessarily that they were removed, but you were, I feel like, more focused on the story, more focused on contributing to the story. There was just a lot less life stuff. So that was my experience as a listener.
I don't even know if that was conscious. That might be the case, but like, that wasn't something that I was doing consciously. I just feel like we never really found our footing again. Like, I feel like we were still trying to figure out what the show was. The show ended because I decided I wanted to leave. For a minute, Emmanuel was thinking about continuing to do it. Then he was like, you know what? I don't want that responsibility. I don't want the responsibility of carrying on a show that I didn't found without you. And so I was like, well, I understand. It makes perfect sense. And I don't blame you. I just wasn't enjoying myself anymore. And it was too hard to make. And it felt too sad, honestly. So I don't think that was conscious, but I totally believe you as a listener that that's what was going on, because I definitely was way more guarded about stuff because people were very mad and letting me know constantly how mad they were.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine that. Honestly, my heart goes out to you because I feel like that was such a big, hard transition to have people not be supportive of you as a person when you're going through this very difficult time to suddenly attack you. It must have just felt like you were getting it from all sides. So I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all right. It was a hard time, like in my personal life too. Like there's a lot going on. My wife and I separated at that time. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm just sorry. You know, as a longtime listener, and you know, you did divulge some things that were going on in your personal life, not as much as you had once, but it felt like that end of reply all when PJ left was just this very serious professional heartbreak for you. I mean, it was a huge, wonderful part of podcasting and internet culture. You and PJ both broke serious ground, developed this amazing show. When he left, I honestly didn't think the show would be able to continue for much longer. And I was really surprised that you and Emmanuel were able to produce such high quality episodes for literally a whole year after. Like, they were great. Some of the episodes you did together, I liked more than the original Reply All. I will say, though, they were more serious and focused on current events and less funny and focused on technology. Did you think it was going to last that long when PJ left? Did you think the show was going to go on for that much longer?
I was hoping that we would sort of hit our stride again and continue going for a while, at least for the first little while, the first 8 months, maybe. I was like, well, we'll figure it out. There was a lot of talk right after he left about whether to continue, but I wanted to try.
Honestly, I felt like you both did a really good job. It just was, they felt like they were episodes for a different audience. I really like serious news and I like more NPR, This American Life type stuff, which it felt more like your show was. I just felt for your original audience, maybe it just wasn't something they would have connected to as much. So after a year, you decided you were like, I'm done. I just don't want to do this anymore. What was your last day like? Like, how did it feel? Was there any moment for you where you're like, okay, I'm done. Like this moment, I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, there was. I don't really want to talk
That's
about
okay.
it.
That's okay. We don't have to. How did your identity change after the show ended? We could just scrap everything we just talked about. How did
It's fine. I don't really know. Like, I don't know who I am anymore as a radio producer. I'm still trying to figure it out.
As someone who, again, has listened to your show, I feel like still same funny, charismatic person on the internet, just maybe looking for a new way to show that to your listeners. That's what it feels like to me. A lot of times with people that go of a really serious or big business and they have to start into something new, there is a period of like, what do I do? What do I do with my talent? What do I do with my time? And a lot of times it feel like sometimes it just finds you. So even if you're struggling with your identity now, I feel like it is going to shape out for you because you are so talented. You are such a good storyteller.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle a lot with figuring out. I've always made radio with PJ. I mean, I was a producer at On the Media with PJ. I made Reply All with him. I don't know what it's like not to be, except for the year that I worked with Adam. And now I'm going back and doing it again. Yeah, I don't know.
What would you like your identity to look like? Forgetting about how you'll get there. If you could establish any kind of identity in media and radio, what would be your ideal right now?
I mean, that's the thing about the person I am on the radio. I don't know how to be anything else, really. So probably the same. I would like to try weird stuff and I would like to make big, crazy stories. And I would like to, you know, go on fun digressions, which is like what I hope to do with the show I'm making now. I would love to be able to get back to that and just work with people that I trust and make stuff I'm proud of. I really don't need much. I don't need success, like fame. I don't need any of that stuff. I just want to be able to make a living and make stuff that I can look back on and be like, hey, that was pretty good. And I realized that the landscape is different now in terms of like what's expected. Like we used to be able to work, you know, put out an episode every 3 weeks or something. And now I'm going to have to put out every week, which is a lot. It's a ton of work. And I have less people. I'm working with less people now. There's less money. That's just the way that the podcast industry has gone. But I'd like to be able to just make fun stuff and learn about the world. I think to a degree, I'm doing that right now. It's always hard because when you start making a new thing, you don't really know what it is until you make it. And you're going to have to make some first. You're going to have to make some bad episodes. The first 15 to 20 episodes of Reply All are like, there are not many bangers in the bunch. they're fine. But like, we were still figuring out what the show was. It was like around the 20th. That's almost a year. Not almost a year. That's half a year. That's like 6 months of making stuff that was like fine before we really hit our stride. And I feel like I'm probably going to be doing that again. And I just hope that people will stick with me while I figure it out. You know, I have a lot of fear about making a new show. It's terrifying to me.
Can tell you, me and my friend Kelly are going to listen to whatever you put out. We're going to be really happy and grateful for it.
Feels like led in with expectation. And like, no matter what I do, it's going to be compared to everything that came before it and compared to the thing that PJ's making now. That's so scary to me. And I don't love that idea, even though I know it's coming.
Well, why is it scary? I mean, you are so talented. And I feel like even if you were to, even if you were pulling an all-nighter, turning in something you work for an hour on and you're not happy with it, it's still going to be better than what like 90% of people produce.
Very kind of you.
I mean, it's true. You have an innate talent for storytelling. You have a huge capacity to empathize with people from all walks of life. It's dumb to ask someone why they are scared or anxious about something, but like, why? You had so many successful episodes under your belt. You did it for a whole year without your co-host, and they were amazing episodes. What about it is so scary?
Low self-esteem. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know, I've been gone. I produce a podcast and I'm a pinch hitter host on this show called Western Kabuki. That's the only thing I've really been doing in the past couple of years. And that's a chat show. It's not reported. I mean, we do research, but it's a chat show. Putting myself out there again in a marketplace that was, for the last year that I was making Reply All, pretty hostile to me, without the person with whom I had this electric chemistry that you described earlier. When David Lee Roth left Van Halen, I think he went and thought he was going to make some amazing solo albums. And that is not how it worked out. And I feel like I might be David Lee Roth. Maybe I'll be Peter Gabriel, but I might be David Lee Roth. Scary. Scary thought.
No, don't have that thought. It's rock. It's really rock.
Thank you, Paige.
No, it's true. I would think of it more like, oh my gosh. Okay, like the Beatles. Everyone in the Beatles had a successful solo career. Maybe you're like George Harrison. Maybe PJ is like John Lennon. I don't know. I enjoyed his part of the show too. I don't know if John Lennon is the disc. Okay, Paul McCartney, whatever. I feel like you're gonna put out really great stuff. I think
if I was to peg us to Beatles, I would say that he is John Lennon and I'm Paul McCartney. John Lennon felt like a real artist. Like he was like just like he had like a real vision, and it was like really unique and weird. And I think of Paul as like a workman. Paul, he's talented, but he's just like, all right, gotta get up and make another album. And he just cranks them out. He's just making music nonstop. He looks at it like a 9-to-5. And I think John Lennon was more like, I don't know, I don't have any evidence to support this. It's just the feeling I get, is that he was more like, I have a lot of inspiration and I need to get that inspiration on the canvas. Like that's PJ. And I'm just sort of like, well, I treat making podcasts like a construction job. I have to build a story and it has to happen every week. It's just now the deadlines are way, way more intense. It's like I built the Taj Mahal and now I have to go back to making stuff and hope people like it.
If it makes you feel any better, even with your analogy, people live in houses that people build in short periods of time all the time and they're happy with it. I think the average listener is not going to hold you to the same standards you are currently holding yourself to. It might feel that way because you had an entire year of people on Reddit being really weird to you for something that wasn't your fault. So I can understand why you'd have that anxiety. But I think you'll find that once you start making your new show, it's going to connect and resonate with listeners in a way you maybe didn't anticipate. But I'm sorry to hear you feel that way. Like that can't be a good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the feeling I've had all my life about stuff. I am not convinced ever that I'm doing a good job. And I'm friends with Jane Marie, who used to work for This American Life and now hosts a podcast about like multi-level marketing called The Dream. She's incredibly talented and just a wonderful person. And she was like, the fact that you are so nervous about it is like evidence that you're going to make something that's fine, but it still feels, I don't know, it's terrifying. I'm so scared.
I mean, maybe part of the pressure is that you're not okay making something that's just fine. Like you want to make something that's great to the same heights as your past show.
Yeah.
It's tricky because you never know what is going to resonate with people. It really is just getting lucky Reply All was an amazing show, and it came at the exact time that a show like that would have been really successful. I think it's kind of out of your hands. Like, you can tell yourself you're objectively very talented. People like listening to you, and you have a built-in audience that is going to listen to whatever you do. But there is that unknown, because it sounds like your first real foray into like launching something that you are putting a lot of your heart into. So I'm sorry. And you know, that must be a hard feeling.
It's okay. I'll figure it out. I've had this feeling my entire life, and I've managed to push through it anyway. So I'll be okay.
Well, okay. When Rapayo was at its heights, did you still have that same feeling? You got like over 1 million ratings on Spotify, which is quite a lot for any show. Did you still have that same feeling of like, am I putting out stuff that's good enough? Because you're getting all this positive feedback from the world. Did you still have that same anxiety?
The anxiety I had went something like this. I would put something out. I would be like, everyone's going to hate this. They'd be warm to it. And then I'd be like, all right, well, that's the last good story I'm ever going to make. That's just like the cycle in my head. Especially when I was like struggling to find a story, there were a lot of weeks off and on where I would like really be struggling and just couldn't find something that felt good or like had enough depth to it. And then I would just be like in agony and just be like, well, I've done it. I've made all the good stories that I have in me. And like all that's left is the garbage and I have to give up. And, you know,
no,
that is.
Just gonna, sorry to interrupt you. Wrong. Creativity. When someone is truly creative in the way you are, it's not like you're an athlete and like once you do a certain number of dives, you've screwed up your body and you're not going to be able to do it anymore. Creativity, it's like a muscle. The more you build it, the more you can use it.
That's another concern. It's like, I feel like, what if that muscle atrophied? Like, what if I've lost it? You know, it's been a couple of years.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I know that I'm not trying to like, here's what I'll say. I really appreciate it. I think your understanding of the world is probably more accurate than mine, but like nothing you can say will convince me because that's just how my soul is.
Okay, then I'll stop trying. But I do want to say, oh my gosh, we were talking about Facebook and the dark media and rabbit holes they would get people into. I think you maybe got into a dark media rabbit hole about yourself. Like the conversations my friend and I would have about different episodes you would do or like things I heard other people say about Reply All. I feel like if you could just have a feedback loop of those things, you might feel differently.
Maybe. But, you know, I can get a million pieces of positive reinforcement and then one negative one. And I'm like, oh, I'm terrible. And that's just kind of like, that's my personality.
That's
unfortunately.
Being human is hard.
Yeah.
It really is. Okay. Well, I know we are coming up on time. And I have to leave on a happy note. Can you tell me scary story. I can't talk about this, and this. Oh, no. I feel like I ruined my rapport with Alex. Shoot. What's one of your favorite memories from the show? Like, what's one you'll always hold on to and treasure?
There's an episode called Today's the Day where we just, it was like us playing hooky instead of making a show. The premise of the thing is instead of making an episode, we just like walked around New York and recorded it, broke into an abandoned factory, did all kinds of silly stuff, rode the cyclone, went to the ocean. That was a really fun couple of days.
Do you guys have a sleepover? When you say a couple of the days, do you guys stay in a hotel? Was it like being in middle school again?
No, it was more like we had like a couple days worth of activities planned and then we kind of cut it all together to be the best takes, be the best moments. So like there was stuff that didn't get into it. Like originally it was like PJ and I went and did separate things and then came back together and did stuff together. So there's like a bunch of stuff that we did separately that didn't end up working. So we recorded it over the course of a couple of days because at the time we had like no runway to finish stories. It's like we had a week to make it. And so we just threw everything at it to see what we could get. And we kept the most fun parts. But it was like, what could be more fun than spending a day like f***ing around with your friends? Like what, some of the stuff that I did without him was like, I went and jammed with my friend John. I went to City Hall and like talked to people who were getting married. Like it was just like silly stuff. I hung out with a friend's kid in Prospect Park. Like it was all like fun stuff. And then we got together and like did stuff together. And it was like great. It was a great fun time. And people really liked that episode because it was weird and like not the thing we made. It had nothing to do with the internet. It was just us just having fun and like taking people along for the ride. That's like the best job day I've ever had, you know, making Reply All, being on vacation basically and recording it.
A good memory?
Great memory. Yeah.
What was your favorite thing you guys did together that day? Did you get cotton candy or go to a fun house or an aquarium? Like what was the...
Oh, we went to the freak show.
What? What?
It's not really a freak show. It's not proper freak show. It's like there was a sword swallower and someone who like breathed fire and stuff like that. It was fun.
Oh, I mean, a proper freak show is the Trump White House. So that you saw like sword swallower like that. That does sound fun.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, a little different. Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So I know we're kind of coming up on time. By the way, thank you so much for coming on my show and for sharing everything. Super interesting. I do have one final question for you, which is, what advice would you give to someone who's maybe going through a shift like you were going through at their job or in their life, where something they'd kind of expected would always be there is just not there in the way it once was? What would you say to them?
You have to be okay with being alone sometimes. And it was a very hard thing for me to learn, but you have to learn how to be okay being by yourself and like being with your own thoughts. I'm working on it. I'll get there.
Well, I think you're doing a great job with it. And I am really excited to see what you will put out next.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on my show, Alex.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Something is happening to me. Something is changing. As I approach you, I notice as I do this feeling of being so new. Something to think of all day. Someone amazing. I have a hard time having waited till I'm done, believing love's finally come. Something has happened to me. Something has changed. I have a feeling, and a feeling you do too. This feeling of being.